Good morning and welcome to Sporting Life with Sam Kekovich and Leon Wigard with the compliments of Michelin Wines. Sam, good morning to you.
Good morning, my friend. How are you?
All right. Now, finished the week, of course. Well, it's early in the week now, but not so early. It's getting late in the week, but you were one of the speakers at the funeral of the great Albert Mansello only a day or two ago. And congratulations, by the way. You did a great job. Must have been a hard role.
Oh, they're never easy, Leon. You know that, eulogising someone in a funeral's very sad occasion. But it was a sad day, particularly for the North Melbourne hierarchy or North Melbourne loyal throng. He was a great contributor both on and off the field at North Melbourne and, in fact, at league level. He was an administrator. And, of course, he just loved life to the full, took everyone with him. And, of course, special reference to the Van Zandt Club, of which you're the chairman, Leon. He loved the Van Zandt Club and all its members. It was a terribly sad day because he led a very full life. And look, you could regale him for hours and hours, but I think we gave him a great send-off under the circumstances. The family were very happy with it, and all in all, at the end of the day, I think we ticked all the boxes.
That was a very fluky, spooky thing that you rang me about from Melbourne Central Cemetery.
Well, it was even spookier, Leon, if I may just digress for a moment. I put the GPS on, you know, to get to the Melbourne Cemetery.
Yeah.
And I was a bit uneasy getting there in the first instance. But when I got there, I wasn't quite happy with Siri either. Siri said, "You've reached your final destination." That was a gag in the Sunday. I thought it was very big. But you're right. As the plot, we were putting Albert to rest. I accidentally leant on the grave next to it. And who should it be? Bert Wigard, your father.
And mother, Mary.
And Mary, your mother. It was quite eerie. I rang you straight away. I said, "The Wigards are here as well."
Yeah.
My
brother Keith is down about 20 metres down the road from where they are. So that was a sad occasion. Happy life, though, and fantastic. It's not called a montage. What is it when there's a whole range of photos?
It is a montage.
Okay, well, that was wonderful.
Yeah.
Gave us a flavour of his life.
Well, it did. I think it depicted it very clearly, the full life that he did enjoy, both, you know, from a social, from a corporate, and from a sporting perspective. You know, he did cover all the broad gamut. There's no doubt about that, and was very influential. But he had a very laconic, easy way about him. You know, he really was ingratiating. He was warm, and he was super smart, as you know, Leon, with the 10-year rule, which obviously still you treat with a degree of suspicion. I know that.
Oh no, I admire North Melbourne was the only clubs that took advantage of it. Frankly, I didn't quite understand it at the time. I wasn't that involved with footy at the time, and I didn't quite understand what was going on. But the rest of the club were less standard. Stranded. So good luck to North. And they picked up Wade and Rentel and Barry Davis and went on with the job. Now,
but deep down, but also you rang me during the week. And you saw a line in the paper. Was there a line in the paper pertaining to North Melbourne? You might as well get it all off your chest. So if people really, I know you harbour a grudge, Leon. I know you harbour a grudge.
They're still on the league. And I admire them for that.
Freedom of information, Leon.
Now, a guy that we've got, and thank you for organising this fella, because he's one of the big names in league football.
And not only that, but one of the greatest guys you'll ever come across.
Oh, all that stuff will see itself out. Come on, Sam. dominated two states, South Australia and Victoria. Was president of his club, captain of his club, player, of course. Played almost 400 senior games in South Australia and Victoria. And, of course, I refer to the great Stephen Six Kernahan. Good morning, Six.
Leon and Keke, how are you, boys?
All right. Have you ever seen Do you ever get sick and tired of talking about the same stuff?
Yeah, look, it's been a while. Not many people ring and ask for an interview with me nowadays, so that's all good with me, by the way. But good to see a couple of gentlemen like yourselves talking to us older blokes. It's good. Hope you've both been well. It's been hard yards through lockdown, hasn't it? We've missed our, how do we call it, Sam, the odd lunch here and there. your beers, and we've really missed them, haven't we? But,
well, yeah, we're looking forward to the opening day, mate, let me assure you.
Correct.
It'd be like like millions of sponges filling up all at once. I can just see it.
That'd be very dangerous. people are hankering for a few restaurant bookings very soon.
Now, Sticks, the reason that you would have done 100 interviews a week in those old days was that that's an intriguing story and stuff that modern football people, young kids, wouldn't realise how Carlton were able to get the three of you, and we'll talk about who they are, from South Australia across to Carlton, how they could build a team at that time, through legal, I imagine it was legal, methods, but they were very, very successful and they had a hugely strong committee that, led by John Elliott, and there were his predecessors too were had a hand in this, and blokes like Dick Pratt and Ian Collins was there all the time, and Wes Loss. It's the South Australian to Carlton story is a big one about footy.
Yeah, it was. Back in we came in at the end of '85. You're talking about Craig Bradley, Peter Motley, and myself, and. I mean, Carlton have been on talking to me since I was about 15 in the under 16 schoolboys championship. Shana Sullivan was the first bloke to speak to me. So, Motts had signed a form four with Sydney, and Bradley's had signed a form four with Essendon. I was always with Carlton. Whoever came over to Melbourne was going to play with Carlton. In 1985, my Glenelg team, which I played with in Adelaide, we finally won a flag and a round of excuses. So, I said to the boys, I'm going. And next minute, a month later, somehow, John Elliott, Wes Lofton, and Collins orchestrated that all three of us were coming to Carlton. And Johnny Platton, who was on the agenda coming to Carlton, he said, well, those three are going there. He ended up going to Hawthorn. So there's going to be Johnny Platton there for a while. And somehow they've got Brattles and Motts on the way through who were going to Essendon or Sydney, both of them. So that was interesting. And it was great because they were two great mates of mine. We played a lot of state footy together and we were 22 when we got here, so we played a lot of footy together in junior state teams and state footy games, SA versus Vicklow. So it was great to come with two good friends.
Now, Sticks, quickly, the reason Platton didn't go to Carlton, and I know very, very clearly, Carlton actually gave him a can. I know how you lured across. With brown paper bags and other gifts, but all that aside, I don't want you to come clean on that just yet. But Platton, I know Jack's to this day. Jack, he always says about Platton, we gave him a brand new car and he never returned it. He kept the car. The fact he kept the car.
I know you two blokes are alluding to some, unlawful behaviour. We're not in the
No.
In those days, but I remember getting $5,000 as a signing on a form four when I was 16. I thought, shit, the world's, how good this? I don't have to go over there and they give me money.
You could have bought Hindley Street for
$5,000. Yeah, that's right. In those days. So, no good days, but all above board, boys, as you know, always.
Now, Sticks, just quickly, I guess it's no secret you turn out to be who you are because you did come from football royalty. I mean, to say your father, Harry, was a champion player and a great administrator. Of course, your brother, David, also played for Glenelg and Carlton. So you had a fairly good bloodline, to start you off.
Yeah, Dad was a good, great player for Glenelg. He played 13 state games. He played in the 63 side that beat the Vics on the MCG, the first time anyone had ever done it. So he was rucking against Big Nick and Polly Farmer that day. So it was one of his proudest moments, I think. So they had that side really stuck together and they'd get togethers every year. So Dad was a good player. Then he ran the Glenelg Footy Club for many years and we won back-to-back premierships in 85 and 86. And my brother Dave, yeah, I played an 85 flag. And then I left and he stayed, played another flag, and he came over at the end of 87. So it was great playing with a brother who played 53 games. He was a good, solid full back, but he had a shitload of injuries. Had bad groin, did his knee. But when he was playing, he was nearly the first bloke picked the full back. So it's great playing with your brother, having him over here, and he still lives in Melbourne today.
The delay in coming across to Victoria was very much about Glenelg getting up and winning that flag before you were able, as you said, running out of excuses. But was that the only reason you stayed there, just loyalty to Glenelg and hoping that they might get some success before you left?
Well, Leon, I sort of meant it. As I said, I was making excuses not to come, but if you remember those days, I mean, South Australia was very competitive against Victoria in those State of Origin games in the 80s. I think we won as many as Victoria did. We beat, played out of six games, I think we shared 3-3, and they were some of the best games we've ever played in those games. So we were happy being in South Australia in our league and watching the Victorian games on winners on a Sunday morning with a nice beer at the drip tray. But, finally, it was time to come. I was 22. I've been playing 136 games before I left. So I thought it was a good, about time to go. And winning that flag in 85 was a good point of saying you better go over and give it a shot. You're not sure whether you're going to come over and be, not make it and be back in a year or so. But I'm still here, 30-odd years, 40, nearly 40 years later.
I don't know if you heard, Leon, but he did mention about 5,000 in a brown paper bag in 81. The reason he didn't come here till 86, you multiply that by five more years, you'll find out why he now lives at Toorak. Anyhow,
I think that was the only payment I received, Sam, before I got it. That's a true story.
Now, Stephen, you arrived 86, and it's unbelievable. You were made captain in your second year, and you won the premiership, amazingly. Were you staggered by that?
Well, our first year, we made the grand final. Hawthorne were super side, and they got us in the granny, but there wasn't much in between both sides. And the next year, we had Motts and Brattles had really, Motts sort of had an action. He missed the 87 final, which is terrible.
Yeah, I want to talk about Motley a bit later on.
We'll talk about Motts a bit later. And getting the flag, being made captain at the start of 87 was a bit embarrassing when you had, Kenny Hunter and Wayne Johnston and these sorts of guys, Justin Madden, Sellers. Martin McClure was my first captain in 86 and he finished at that. I didn't stab him in the back. I just wanted a young bloke to take him through. So I was sort of 23, got the job. And, we had a good year and we turned the tails on Hawthorne in 87 final. So, we won much in our two sides and it was one each after our first 2 years. So I was a bit embarrassed getting a job. I didn't think I'd earned the right, but after 1 year, Wallsy made the call and it was good to get the flag on the board.
You mentioned his name earlier. Yeah, sorry, Leo.
Yeah, I was just on that captaincy, Six. Without saying that too lightly, did you have any experience at all at leadership in your footy career after the age of 22?
I don't know if you guys have heard, Peter Carey was my captain at Glenelg throughout, when I first started there, and I ended up being vice captain to him for the last few years. So he was a legend over there, and I was vice captain the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So, I wouldn't say I was I call that experience with just playing under a great player, and, when I came over, it wasn't. But, we could have 10 guys, and all my time at Carlton, especially leading up to the 95, all that time, we had so many blokes we could have captained those sides. So, lucky to get it. Wasn't sure I deserved it, but they wanted me to do it. I had no choice at the end.
Don't understate yourself. Stop being humble. You're a great leader. Just let's get back to Peter Motley. There are certain things in life you remember. And, I remember when Elvis died. I remember when a number of things happened, when the war went down in the Brandenburg Wall in 89. And I always remember when Peter Motley had that horrific car crash and was left as a paraplegic or a quadriplegic. Yeah. It would just send shockwaves through the footballing world because he was such a talent, wasn't he?
He was. He was a serious player. And Brattle's played to his 39, Craig Bradley, and I think Motts was as fit as he was and bigger and jumped higher. And he was a serious player and is ready to take VFL AFL by storm then. And he had that the car accident. He was just sitting at the lights after team meeting on a Thursday night. I'll never forget it. And we played Geelong at Waverley on Saturday. And I don't know how we won that day. We were all in shock because we didn't think he was going to make it at that time. But he came out of the coma after a couple of weeks and, started a long road recovering. He wasn't a quadriplegic, Sam. He's had trouble the whole right-hand side. His arm is not used. He can walk.
Oh, right, yeah.
But a really bad right leg. He sort of limps around, but he can get around in Adelaide, which is great. He's got a really nice lady in Adelaide. They've had a young child, which is fantastic. So for those times, for him to get through that, if he wasn't so fit and strong, I don't think any man would have survived. And when Brattles and I went and saw him for the first time, it was a real shock to see him. You know, he's had some horrific injuries from it. So to survive and, still be going today, and we always catch up with him in Adelaide when we go home and play golf with him. He still plays golf one-handed, and it's good to, he's a great card man. And what a player he would have been, Sam.
One of the nicest things I saw in my sporting career was playing at Kew Golf Club one day with a couple of mates, and you and Brattles were, as you normally do, playing together, and you had Motley with you, with one of the other Carlton boys, I forget now, but the care and attention that you gave him and continue to give him was just outstanding, and when you see this day and age of, former footballers perhaps not always living up to their reputation, going off the rails a bit, it was just lovely to see that camaraderie continue after that accident. It was just a nice thing. Quite teary, really.
It was. Well, I used to see you at a few golf courses, especially Q Leon in the old days. That's always good.
Daily.
He loved his golf, and he was a serious player, and he plays with his left arm, swings with his left arm, and he hits him pretty well. He's getting a bit tired now. He's not as fit as he used to be, but he's got his competitors. We give him three shots a hole, and he's very competitive till the end. So we love playing with him, and Brattles and him lived together when the accident happened. So Brattles was as tight as the family member was with him. So we had our we have a golf trip, a World Cup with 12 to 15 XL car blokes every year. Whenever we go to South Australia, Mott's always comes out for a round with us all. So it's great to keep in contact with him. He's a great man, and he's leading a good life at Adelaide now.
Sticks, you've presided your playing days over Carlton in its most successful eras under a number of coaches, obviously Dave Park and predominantly in Walls. You had a great relationship. You had kicked 740 goals, I think, when you retired in 97, and you broke Harry Valance's long-standing record.
Oh, poor Harry, yeah.
Yeah.
He's
Sophie. Valance, old Sophie. But you must be, and I know you're enormously proud of that, but as I said, you presided over a very successful era. Carlton were the powerhouse during your time. And you had some amazing people to represent the club, some real personalities, some real characters. How'd you keep those together? How'd you bond together? Because, a lot of them would be very close to being on the FBI 10 Most Wanted.
Well, you might be referring to, I had the, when I was the luck or the good luck or misfortune or what you call it, but I lived with Jimmy Buckley the first 2 years that I lived in Melbourne. I came across, I went for 2 weeks to Jimmy's place, and I lasted 2 years. So we had all sorts of people coming. The Moran brothers as young lads were came through a few times. I think there might be an SP bookie running out of there for a few weekends and one place for great. So they were great days. Jimmy, what a better way to get introduced to Melbourne than living with Jimmy Buckley for 2 years. Alex Marchfield, all those great fellas, and Wayne Johnston, blokes who I watched on TV before, I never met them, became great mates of mine, getting a captain set at that young age, they were so good to me, all those senior blokes.
And great players too.
Yeah, great players. All those blokes played in 79, 81, 82, and some of them in 87. So, serious players. And they were coming near the end when I got there, a few of them. But, they were great blokes to train and play with them. And those days, Kicker, of course, and Leon, we enjoyed ourselves. We played Saturday afternoon. I think we enjoyed ourselves Saturday night. We kicked on through Sunday usually. They were the great times being with your mates after a game of footy. They were the best times I remember.
What do you mean Sunday? We got home Wednesday morning.
We're late. Yeah. Oh, sorry. I should say some. I think Wayne Johnson and Sellers were at the Wednesday, the or billboards or whatever was open in those days. Kecker was John Elliott, of course, and Wes Lofts, those sorts of guys who presided over the club. We won in 87. He won another one for 95, but they were great friends of everybody at the club, and while Jack polarised a few people, he was great to Carlton people and great to myself and the family, so I was so sad to see him go.
It was a sad day,
It really shocked me. I thought he'd live forever, but they don't.
They don't. Two things I want to ask you, Sticks, about two relationships. When David Rees-Jones got across to Carlton, and it was well documented with Diesel, the events that transpired when they were opposing players. How testy was the relationship, and how difficult was it for you to manage?
Well, they're actually all right. I think they just said, look, let's move on. What happens on the field happens on the field. Of course, you know, Reece broke Diesel's shoulder by kneeing him from behind, and Diesel wouldn't go off the ground until he evened up, and he chased him for 5 minutes, and you'll see the footage of that great, beautifully landed right hooked to Bruce's jaw. Bruce has still got that slightly crooked jaw to this day because of it, but I think it sort of showed a bit when they both wrote books, and I think Diesel's book at the end of his career, he had a chapter which was called Why I Broke Reece Jones's Jaw, and I don't think that may have soured a little bit the relationship for a while, but they're pretty good when we play together. They were no worries then, so... But later on, and I think that they've been a lot better now. I did a function with them earlier this year when we had some time out, so they're going well now. I think people move on, and they're two pretty, very hard blokes, weren't they, on and off the field?
They were indeed.
Could I ask about another Wayne, Wayne Harms? I don't know how far over the boundary line he was, but I reckon I don't reckon it'd be a gimme pat. I reckon it, what was your? I'm it's way way into the background now. But what was your take on that? Would you?
Well, some people say he may have been in the first row, Leon, but he may have been slightly over. Pick Harms, what a legend. That bloke, when I got there, he could do anything. It was just unbelievable. I used to watch him on the TV, and next minute you're playing with him, and whilst it was near the end, what a player he was, and that moment sort of signifies him. But some of the stuff he did on the field was like that. He did all the freaky stuff, and that'll be well remembered, that one, won't it? But, yeah, it may have been just over Leon, if you're asking me.
Well, I mean, those things happen so quickly, and people sort of, you need your second vision. It's just as if you take a photo or something. To me, I was in the stadium that day, and I thought, oh, that's marginal. Well, these days, you know, Sticks, it seems to me that they just throw the book away. They pay a mark if it's 2 feet over the line now. To keep the ball, just to keep the game moving, I think.
Well, there's a few more umpires and officiating out there than there was in those days too, so they've got a lot more eyes on it. They've got cameras everywhere now, so it may have been picked up, I'm not sure. But we'll take it. It's haunted the Collingwood people, but we love it at Carlton.
Wayne, of course, was a long-serving member of the Visi Board staff and a very loyal man to Dick Pratt, and he did a wonderful job there, Wayne Harms.
Yeah, Harms has been there to this day, and he's going well. We hope to see him around Carlton a bit more, but it's been hard to do anything in the last couple of years, as we know. So great Carlton man to go, great man to be with. After a game, enjoyed a drink, and as we all did in those days.
Sticks, Leon asked the question before. Yeah, Carlton were very strong, and you know you didn't come over for a while. And one of the reasons Carlton was strong and why they ultimately toppled was they were fantastic when, you know, footy was, you know, like the country was run democratically and not become a socialist state. You know, when they closed the avenues of private enterprise with the advent of the draft and so forth, all of a sudden the Carlton heavyweights and the bankroll, pardon me, and the, you know, when money couldn't determine the outcome, you know, Carlton took a while to recover from that because everything, you know, the Elliots and the Pratts felt, well, everything's for sale, we can buy it. But those rules changed dramatically, and as a consequence, you know, the game became even and they couldn't all of a sudden go over their checkbooks and buy the Kernahans and the Bradleys. And then they hit that wall and once again you came to the rescue, you took over the presidency when Dick unfortunately had to deal with the Australian Competition and Consumer Watchdog. That must have been
I mean, of course, I mean, the salary caps hit us in 2002, the end of 2002 for the 2003 season. And, you know, we played, we won in 95. A lot of us old blokes retired in 97. And we played in grand final again in 99. And then we really had a few senior blokes just finishing their careers for Craig Bradley and Aaron Hamill and Peter Dunne. A lot of guys, I can't remember all their names now, but Dennis Pagan came in and sort of, you know, when that hit, $1 million in those days with clubs turnover was nothing like they are now. And clubs struggled to make money. Our membership would have been very small in those days. Now memberships are, you know, some clubs have got over 100,000. We've got 80-odd thousand now ourselves. So very different then. It really put the shackles on. But we got Dick Pratt back. Those bad years, Dennis got caught with a young side. We got denied the draft for 2 years and couldn't rebuild. And then Brett Ratton came in and Dick Pratt came to the club and, you know, we played finals 4 or 5 years and unfortunately, we got Dick back in 2007. It was great for a couple of years. We went overseas to Malaysia for a week with him and flew in his jet, which was just, you know, great times and great sitting with a great man. We really got to know him really well in those times. And when he got back, he went straight to hospital and didn't get out and he passed away in April in 2009, so I was his vice president and he asked me to do the job and not that I really needed it, but I did the job for a while and, you know, those things are all love jobs and they're all service to the club and I wish Dick had been alive to do it because he was enjoying himself and, you know, we weren't a bad side for a few of those years. We just couldn't get the ultimate done. We played finals 4 or 5 but couldn't get there in the end.
Oh, Stick, you did a wonderful job and you really grew into the job. And I think at the end, I don't know, Gudishay took over. I think you would have liked to have stayed in the job, wouldn't you not?
Pick up pointers off you, Sam, but I wasn't orator to your level by a long, long way, which I accept. If you keep the speeches short, sharp, and get off, that's probably a quick speech is a good speech. I always took that theory in.
You were a wonderful servant of the club. There's no doubt about that. And what do you view on Voss's appointment now?
Yeah, no. Look, I'm happy. I mean, there's a bit of time of unrest, change of presidency, change of board members, change of coach, change of CEO. I mean, Kane Little did not much wrong, but to get a bloke like Brian Cook in, you know, it was a bit of a stabilising thing for the club, I think, and he's obviously thought of pretty highly throughout the AFL. And to get a guy like Michael Voss, I think Bear and I tried to get him to the club after he finished playing many years ago. To come and sort of learn under Dennis Pagan those days, many years ago, but he's going to go to West Coast and, of course, Lee Matthews finished at the Lions and they hired him straight away, so he went straight into coaching. So I reckon he's going to be really good the second time around. He's been at, you know, Port for 8 years. He's a really good bloke, boss. He went hard. I mean, we don't forget, but people might forget how good that bloke was. In 3 flags, he was a dominating presence, a huge, hard player on the ground. And with our new footy director, Greg Williams, Sam, you couldn't get too hard a bloke from the helm. So I look forward to Voxie, you know, being it'd be great to have a 10-year coach at Carlton. It's about time we had a long-term one. I hope Voxie's the one. Everyone's going to be right behind him, that's for sure.
Six, can I take you back to South Australia again? Motley, Robram, Knuckles Curley, there's some great players never came across the border and played here. Now, we Victorians being very, we all think about ourselves as being important, but the competition in South Australia and the people that are loyal to South Australia over the period have been amazing. So I don't know, those three players are all different sorts of players. I'm talking about Motley Senior, of course. Robram's the one that everybody seems to say that he would have walked into AFL footy.
Yeah, he was a superstar, Barry Robram, and I think he's a legend of the AFL, so that's, I think, the only I hope I'm right here. He's one of the few South Australians in the legend level of the Hall of Fame. And what a star he was. He took hangers every week. He played in the middle. He could jump on. Take screamers all around the ground. Beautiful in tight, beautiful outside. Kicked the left and right well. One of the great players. Absolute gentleman he was too. And I think that was that era just before we went, the decades before where he played. Everyone just played in South Australia. That was home. Victoria was another state, and everyone was happy to be home because all those leagues were pretty strong, certainly through the 60s, 70s and 80s. Knuckles Curley back in the early days, and Barry Robber and Russell Ebert, another one who did go to North Melbourne for a year, but at the wrong time of his career probably. He's an absolute superstar. Robber and Ebert were, those guys just before I started playing were just legends of South Australia. So they would have, at their prime, they would have walked into any side, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Now, you mentioned his name, Russell Ebert, Sticks. I know he's currently enduring ill health. What's the latest update on him at the moment?
Yeah, I spoke to Brattles a month or so again. I think he's being treated, and, he's pretty crook, apparently, so we wish him all the best, and hopefully that gets better if possible. But he's fairly sick, there's no doubt about that.
Are you still interested in, that's the wrong word, vitally interested in the Carlton Footy Club, or are you one of those that sort of did your thing in all those different categories, player, captain, president, and then walked away saying, well, that's my job there? Or do you still stay very, very much involved?
No, look, I'm not involved officially, but I sit there on weekends watching us, and my kids think I'm a psychopath now, watching from the TV and... I don't go to work. I go now and again with mates and have a few beers and get invited now and again, and that's great. But I enjoy watching the Blues as much as I ever have, and we haven't been great for a while, so we're hoping that can end in the near future. I'm still as invested in watching us as I ever was, and I want our blokes to. I just want these new blokes to write some new history for the footy club. So I've got a mate who's on the board there now, Greg Williams. I've got a lot of mates down there still everywhere, but. Dees was down there in the footy director job, so that's good. So Bear and I, Adrian Gleeson, and that mate who helped me throughout my time at Carlton on the board, will be nice sitting behind Diesel and watching with interest. So I hope the boys get it right and we can win a few games and play finals and get better.
It's getting very close to lunchtime here on a Thursday, and that means that Sam Kekovic will be just going for that bottle of Michelin print. It'll be.
I've got it open. It's open.
Oh, airing.
I'm just a candidate. You got me. The Michelin print.
Leon, I reckon there's no doubt he's already had a go at that.
I want to ask him one last question, Leon, before we let him go.
Yeah.
I want to know on record, and I've had a number of people I've asked that are qualified at Carlton, and they're within two or three. What's the most amount of words that Bruce Doole has ever said in one year?
Well, he rang me once when I was a kid trying to get me to Carlton. I'm not kidding you. I had to do all the talking. He said, Bruce Doole, you're in the speed kicker. It was unbelievable. I had to do, oh, how are you, Bruce? I just finished the lead off and finished the conversation. So
I was going to...
That bloke, I had one year with him, and he was 36 his last year. He lost that grand final to Hawthorn, and I don't think he got beaten all year. Dunstall kicked six in the granny, but it wasn't his fault. And he was still a legend at 36, and I had the pleasure of that year going on the footy trip with him and sitting with him on the way there and on the way back. And I'll never forget, he didn't say much, but just one of the great memories, sitting having a beer with Bruce on the way. On the way there and the way back from London.
Yeah, it would be.
Six, you're an ornament of the game. You've done a lot, and we appreciate you being with us on Sport and Life. Good luck to you in the future, and we'll catch up to you on a golf course real soon.
Always a beer. Gentlemen, and great mentors to all of us young blokes in football, and you're still doing it. And what two better drinks blokes to have a drink with, I don't know.
you see us, Nick. You're a gentleman.
Stephen Kernahan on Sport and Life.